Welcome everyone to the Antinatalist Advocacy Podcast, where we speak to interesting and knowledgeable people about how best to protect sentient beings from the harms of coming into existence. I'm your host, John, an antinatalist advocate from the UK, and I'll be the main host of the podcast going forward. Well, it's been about 2 weeks since our very first Antinatalist Advocacy Conference, AAC 23, Antinatalism at a Crossroads. We just wanted to say a huge thank you to everyone who got involved and made it possible. We're really happy with how it went, and we're definitely planning on hosting some more conferences in the future. In case you missed it live, it's all been uploaded onto our YouTube channel, and you can let us know your thoughts by filling in our feedback survey, and all links are in the description. It's only 10 days or so until Christmas, and we've got a bit of a gift for you with our very first crossover episode with Carlos and Lenny, aka the guys behind Voidcast. Described as just two vegan antinatalists trying to make sense of the world, Voidcast is a fellow antinatalist podcast that touches on philosophy, activism, and antinatalism in pop culture. If you'd like a deep dive into the how and why of Voidcast, you can check out the conversation they had on Lawrence's channel earlier this year, as well as enjoying their back catalogue of episodes. Once again, all relevant links are in the description. Now, for the content of this episode, we were planning on having a general chat on antinatalist activism before diving into Carlos and Lenny's criticisms of antinatalist advocacy as an organisation. However, once we got into this chat, it was pretty clear that I'd been way too ambitious with what we could feasibly fit into one episode. Therefore, we decided to park the par where they tear to shreds mine and Lawrence's efforts over the past year, so we can do a deep dive into this subject properly in a different episode. This might sound like a daft idea to give the hosts of a rival podcast an entire episode to criticise our work, but we really do value constructive feedback from our fellow antinatalists, so you can look forward to that episode coming out in a few months' time. Anyway, without further ado, I bring you episode 6 of the Antinatalist Advocacy Podcast, our crossover with Voidcast. Enjoy. Welcome everyone to episode 6 of the Antinatalist Advocacy Podcast, and welcome to my two guests, Carlos and Lenny. It's great to have you with us.
Hey, hello.
Thank you for having us, and congratulations again on the conference that you hosted last weekend.
No worries. Glad you enjoyed it. As I was saying on the stream, nearly all the organising was done by Lawrence, so all credit deserves to go to him. But yeah, did you both want to give an introduction to yourselves? How you became interested in antinatalism, that kind of thing? Carlos, do you want to go first?
Sure. You know my name. I'm originally from Portugal. I've been living in the UK for 17 years now, so I'm kind of culturally almost fully anglicized by now, as in I understand the jokes, and I'm like in a constant state of sarcasm and understand things like banter instead of getting offended.
It's great to hear that you've been so culturally enriched by your time here.
Yeah, thank you. It's all the important stuff. I mean, I was watching the snooker this weekend, so that tells you something. I do watch like cricket and stuff like that. Anyway, although I have rejected British citizenship so far, mostly on the basis of having to swear fealty to a monarch, which seems a very hard pill to swallow.
I think that's totally fair, to be honest. I think a lot of English people would find that difficult too.
Yeah, even though you don't get a choice, right? Exactly. But I do, so I chose not to. Anyway, so I'm 46. I've been interested in antinatalism and, I would say, pessimistic philosophy since I was a teenager, pretty much reading books in the library. So these would be pre-internet days. Schopenhauer at the time really resonated with me as a sort of a misfit teenager. And it kind of, as I figured myself out and figured out life and became, I would say, a much more contented adult than I was as a teenager, all the stuff I had read still rang true. And in fact, I had this blog that I was running, you know, back before when you had to kind of get a server and upload the, you know, things to your server and configure everything manually. There were no like ready-made blogs that you just put the text in. Like in the early 2000s, I wrote a text that was kind of mostly antinatalist, a bit child-free logic in it as well. So that would be like 2001 to 2002. So for me, that's as far back as it goes, like to 20 years. And I've never changed my mind. And at no point did I ever change my mind about antinatalism. I just started learning more about antinatalism from, you know, philosophers and thinkers and, you know, thinkers who post on the internet, and kind of discussing them with other people once I found them and, you know, understood there was actual term for it. And yeah, so that just kind of I kept on it. As far as veganism goes, I've always been one of those hypocrites who say they love animals, but then kind of never actually took the plunge. I mean, it's much easier not to have children than to, because that's something you haven't done before, right? If you haven't done it before, just to have the first one. Whereas, you know, eating meat is something I'd done all my life, so that was something I needed to cut, which is a much harder thing to change. But I did become vegetarian in 2009 as a New Year's thing. Well, so first of January 2010, and then shortly after, trying to remove more and more hypocrisy from my life, shortly after I became a full vegan.
Right. I will come to you in a moment, Lenny, but I just wanted to ask Carlos, what was it like reading Schopenhauer as a teenager?
Oh, I mean, I'm sure some of you viewers have had this experience. Well, I hope at least. Some of the stuff was very impenetrable, but I kind of started with, Studies in Pessimism, I think it's called. Lenny's going to correct me. He's the corrector in chief
bibliography. The English title, yeah.
Yeah. Studies in Pessimism, which is kind of very easy to understand language, isn't it? And if you just ignore the section on women and just focus on the other parts and on the other essays, it basically described my worldview. And I, as weird as it sounds, and I'm sure you've heard other people who are interested in pessimistic philosophy describe it, it's actually a source of solace and comfort to read that somebody else in the world at some point thought the same things you thought, if those thoughts are kind of not very mainstream. So I actually found a lot of comfort in those words.
David Benatar says that he gets a lot of messages from people who've just come across his work, who've had these thoughts for decades, and definitely can help provide that solace. But thanks, Carlos. Lenny, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Lenny, I'm 27, and I live in the north of Germany. I'm currently still wrapping up my master's degree in classical philology, that is ancient literature. And besides my studies, I'm working three jobs in teaching and research, you know, just trying to make ends meet. I've kept myself busy over the past couple of months with a number of more or less antinatalism or pessimism more generally related projects, though mostly in the background and mostly in one way or another related to literature and academia, such as tracking down, transcribing, translating, editing some obscure books, writing stuff like summaries, essays, and poetry, collecting material and putting together bibliographies, and organizing local events, small conferences, and local meetups. And now I'm doing this wonderful podcast together with my friend Carlos. So I guess that makes me a content creator, whatever that's supposed to mean. I mean, I could be mumbling or screaming into a camera for 20 minutes straight, or just record myself playing video games, and I'd still be a content creator. So make of that what you will. But for most people, I guess I'm just a random guy on the internet with a funny accent and a couple of niche interests and needlessly strong opinions on these. And for the people on Discord, I guess I'm just a meme at this point. And yeah, how I became interested in antinatalism, I found it through literature, actually, even in roughly chronological order. So first through ancient Greek philosophy and poetry and some supposedly antinatalist passages in the Old Testament. Then in early 2022, through 19th century German pessimism, for me it was specifically Philipp Mainländer, before I arrived at contemporary antinatalism, Thomas Ligotti, David Benatar, and Karim Akerman. And I eventually joined the antinatalist community, if there even is such a thing, if you can call it that, in August 2022, so a bit more than a year ago. First on Reddit with my Koenig post, then on Discord through an invitation by my buddy Conundrum, and later also at in-person events that I organized together with Karim Akerman. So yeah, I think it's a fascinating position. Antinatalism raises ethical questions on a very fundamental level, not just how should we be, how should we act, but should we be, should we exist at all? And in doing so, I think it challenges some of our deeply held beliefs and intuitions about life, the value of life, and the value of creating more of it. And yeah, presents intriguing and compelling arguments, I think, that challenge the default, the pronatalist position. But yeah, I think you could say that for me, the fascination came first and the agreement came later.
Great. Thanks, Lenny. And if this isn't too much of a tangent, I was wondering, because a lot of, as you said, a lot of pessimistic writing does come from Germany. And just anecdotally, I seem to meet a fair few German antinatalists. Is there something about the German character or psyche that leads itself to these kind of pessimistic worldviews, do you think?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, if we consider that a lot of writings on pessimism were produced in Germany in the 19th century, especially. I mean, one is inclined to assume that there are certain like character traits maybe in Germans, but I don't know if there is empirical evidence for that.
I'm just wondering, because, you know, as a Brit from a country which is famous for complaining about everything and enjoying complaining about everything, you would have thought that maybe some pessimistic philosophy might have come out of Britain. But no, my hometown where I grew up once had the highest teenage pregnancy rate in Europe. So for some reason, our love of complaining doesn't appear to go alongside.
I hope you had no part in that.
Fortunately not. As you mentioned just there, Lenny, obviously you guys are coming on because you are the hosts of an antinatalist podcast, which makes me a fool to platform one of my key rivals in the antinatalist podcast space. So this is a very bad business move from my point of view. But Carlos, first, you want to tell us a little bit about Voidcast, how it got going, your motivations for setting it up, that kind of thing?
Yeah, so it's impossible not to talk about the podcast that came before that one, the Void Wave podcast, which was me talking about antinatalism and pessimistic philosophy and leftist politics as well with a German friend. And then that ended, and then I ended up in another podcast talking to a German, which, you know, just goes to show that life is just cycles of the same things happening over and over again. But I guess the idea with Void Wave and Voidcast as well, even though obviously it's different people, so there's a different tone and different topics covered. It was just to, well, at least with Void Wave, I can tell you that our idea was just to add to what we thought was a very poor online discourse around antinatalism. Everybody complains about the subreddit, and with reason. And also we found that there wasn't a good kind of mention about pieces of media that could be used to talk about antinatalism or pessimism and popular culture, other elements of popular culture that can be used. But ultimately, Void Wave was about just kind of two people who had met in the pessimistic philosophy / antinatalism community online, and just wanted to kind of do a project together. Unfortunately, that ended. due to personal reasons from my co-host. And then kind of Lenny came along and he had listened to all the Void Waves, apparently, and had made notes about them even. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to do his own podcast. And because I was available, I said, yeah, well, let's get on it. And I think we don't have like a mission statement, like a company or anything like that. But I think our goal is pretty much the same as Void Wave, is kind of adding to online antinatalist discourse and kind of opening some doors and kind of showing people what we think is a good representation of antinatalism and kind of elevating the discourse around it and kind of expanding it as well to pieces of media. So, for example, when we reviewed a movie like Any Arrow, we had a lot of comments and messages saying, oh, that's amazing, you know, that really fits what we've been trying. Yes, it does. And we wanted to share this with you, with the community, so you can also kind of enjoy antinatalism in a sort of a fictional format, if you will.
Yeah, but I think before we get into which function, you know, Voidcast may or may not serve in the community, I think it's important to point out that I personally don't consider myself an antinatalist activist, and I don't think of Voidcast as a form of activism either. For me, it's just a hobby. We're not doing this for glory or fame or money or influence or anything, and certainly not out of a sense of obligation. We're doing it because we're passionate about it, because it gives us something cool to do in our free time, and it's nice to have a project with a somewhat regular schedule going on. And we have a lot of fun doing it.
Great. Well, that was actually going to be my next question, which was going to be like, what are the goals for Voidcast in terms of, you know, like aims long term? What would success look like, would you say, with Voidcast?
Yeah. So as I said, it's a hobby that we're both passionate about. But if we can share what we're doing with others, and if they enjoy it and find something of value in our ramblings, then that's even better. So a few things that we can talk about is the entertainment aspect that Carlos just mentioned, that we also discussed in our interview with Lawrence, as well as the aspect of comfort and company. As we said, we are vegan antinatalists, left-leaning people, and they are really not many of us on this planet, and it's very easy to feel very isolated, especially if you know no one else who thinks like you and, you know, who also shares these values and these beliefs. So we thought with our podcast, with this casual format, just two friends talking about things they like and enjoy and are passionate about, maybe this can bring some comfort and provide some company for people as well. And but besides these, there's, I think, also another aspect, because many years ago I used to do another podcast on a completely unrelated subject, and there we had a kind of slogan that we wanted to entertain as well as to educate, so both cover both of these aspects. And when you listen to Voidcast, you'll notice that Carlos and I, we frequently draw on literature and cite interesting passages and so forth. And so one of my aims is also to make the literature more accessible and show that these books are indeed worth reading, worth engaging with, and can actually enhance, for example, your viewing experience or your life in general, and show that there's still a lot to discover, even if you are relatively sure and have made up your mind about your ethical views. I think it's always important to stay curious and to discover more. And as you probably know, we've spent a lot of time voicing our dissatisfaction and our complaints, so I think it's also nice simply to contribute to make some productive contribution to the community and to the discourse as well. And I think we bring a new perspective to the discussion that is sometimes, I feel, a bit underrepresented. So just a few words about our perspective and our position. So we are two vegan antinatalists who are not interested in blowing up the world or brutalizing pregnant women, which sadly cannot be taken for granted in antinatalist spaces, as you probably know. And we are not in the possession of the ultimate, absolute, objective truth. So if you're looking for that, please look elsewhere. I'm sure there are enough people on the internet eager to sell you their ideas as objective truths. So we're not the spokespeople for antinatalism or anything. We don't claim that our perspective is in any way the official one or the authoritative one or the only one. And we're literally just two guys trying to make sense of the void, as the channel description says. And on the first episode, I said that I think of antinatalism and its advocacy and its claim to universality as some sort of a spectrum, with cynical resignation on the one end and, let's call it, wide-eyed activism on the other end. So I'm a fan. Are you familiar with the work or the creative output of Andrew McIntosh?
I'm not personally, no.
Okay, so he's an Australian musician and antinatalist, and he takes what he calls a miserablist approach to antinatalism. So he's very, very, very skeptical when it comes to antinatalist activism, or perhaps activism in general. He participated in a debate in the Antinatalist magazine in the fourth issue, if I'm not mistaken, of the Antinatalist magazine. And he also has a YouTube channel where he uploads music and poetry and also a couple of video essays. And I recently had Lawrence react to one of his videos, which Lawrence said gave him easy to be cynical energy. I thought that was quite funny. And of course, I disagree with Andrew on a number of things, but nonetheless, I think he is an important voice in the online antinatalist discourse, and I think more antinatalists should listen to his ineffectual whingings. If nothing else, they provide an interesting and valuable contrast to what I feel is the dominant narrative in antinatalist circles. So on the one end of the spectrum, we have Andrew and his miserablists, and on the other end, we have those who want to go forth and spread the word and convert the masses. And although I am generally sympathetic to both sides to some extent, and I'm on good terms with people on both ends, to be honest, I don't know where I find myself on that imagined spectrum. And this has actually changed over time, when my initial enthusiasm and excitement was gradually, but not completely, of course, superseded by a sense of disappointment due to a number of frustrating experiences I've had with antinatalism and in the antinatalist community, which we can talk about later. But in any case, my perspective, that is one half of Voidcast, is considerably more pessimistic than the one that is promoted by, you know, more vocal antinatalists and antinatalist activists online.
Great, thanks, Lenny. And Carlos, did you, just before we do get into the main topic of today, which was going to be, of course, antinatalist activism, was there anything that you wanted to say about Voidcast, bearing in mind that we don't want to tread old ground with the interview that you did with Lawrence, which will be sure to be linked below?
I am a content creator, although not of the internet kind. I play guitar and record music, and I write fiction. And my guide in general, if I want to be involved in a project, if it's not a rent-paying and a bills-paying project, which Voidcast will never be, is am I having fun doing it and learning things, which for me, learning things and having fun kind of go together. And yes, I do learn a lot doing the podcast, like reading giant books about extinction, which I would not probably not have read otherwise. So I enjoy learning, I have fun with it. So yes, that's a criteria for doing podcasts. And the other criteria that I have is, would am I creating something that I would enjoy myself, that a person like me, somewhat like me, would enjoy? And I applied this to the fiction and to the music and so on. And yes, a person like me, if I wasn't the one recording it, I would enjoy it, listening to it and the topics covered, and I would look forward to it every month. So it fills both criteria. So yeah, I do it.
Great. And as I just mentioned there, obviously we don't want to be treading old ground in terms of going a deep dive into Voidcast. We brought you on today to hear your thoughts about the main topic of today's episode, which is, of course, antinatalists wanting to make the world better. So Lenny, you have given us a bit of a rundown in terms of your perspective on this subject. Carlos, would you like to just say what comes to your mind when you hear this subject?
The antinatalism activism, sorry.
Yes, just general attempts from antinatalists to try and make the world better.
I mean, look, Lenny might not think with making the world better. I mean, we're not evangelizing antinatalism, but in the same way that all of us kind of came to antinatalism through one way or another, some people might come to antinatalism through our podcast. Maybe they're just looking for a review of Aniara or something, or and they come across that video and they go, oh, wait a minute, this makes sense.
The moment someone says, Lenny, it was your podcast that made me embrace antinatalism, I will reluctantly accept the antinatalist activist label.
Well, you never know the seeds, right? You may be just planting a seed that then bears fruit in the, I guess this in this case doesn't bear fruit later on. I definitely don't believe I can change the world. I do a lot of vegan activism. I've spoken about this elsewhere, but I'm a hunt sab, so I'm trying to stop illegal fox hunting from happening in England. So that means a lot of running in the mud every weekend. I do vegan outreach, which means talking to a lot of idiots and non-idiots every week as well. Those things, I think I can change the world. I don't think, for me, antinatalism has found an activist form, not just in the shape it takes, the activism itself, but in terms of stated goals or realistic goals or how to motivate the activists themselves to keep going, that I'm completely comfortable with. And because I have all the vegan activism to get along with, I'm not particularly fussed at the moment of trying to find this shape for antinatalist activism. So for me, it's I'm not much of a creator. Well, I do create things, but I'm not much of like an innovator type person. I'm more somebody who finds something that exists and then tries to perfect it and take part in it. So I don't think antinatalist activism has got there where I can just look and say, oh, this is good, let me tweak it. It's not really not the way kind of my brain works, and I've learned to accept it. I'm certainly old enough to know myself by now. So I'm not that interested in that topic at the moment. If I was interested at all in any kind of antinatalism adjacent type of activism, it would be to do with the reproductive rights. So, for example, like a charity, like Population Matters, for example, or, you know, something along those lines, where you're just trying to at least give women around the world the option and the education necessary to let them make the choice, which would, I mean, if just doing that, will, you know, imagine, for example, women around the world had the same reproductive rights they have in the UK, for example, that would be a massive difference to birth rates, right? That would be a massive diminishing of birth rates around the world. And is that antinatalist activism or not? Maybe. Would the results functionally be different from antinatalist activism? Probably not. So I'll leave those questions for other people who are busy thinking of them. As for me, I'm kind of running in the British countryside and talking to people on the street.
Great. And just one thing that I picked up on there when you were both talking is, and I think this is common within the antinatalist community, and I wonder if as well this comes from because a lot of antinatalists who are active were previously in the vegan community, where the focus is very much on trying to turn people into vegans. It's a bit like, in many ways, like religious being a religious evangelical. Most of the activism is around getting more people in your group. And I wonder, as we think about opportunities for antinatalists to have an impact, what are your thoughts on the capability of antinatalists to go out and convert people to antinatalism? Lenny, did you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. So, two things. I'm not sure if antinatalism is suitable for turning it into a cause to rally behind. And secondly, I'm not sure if the antinatalist community is suitable for building a movement on. So, first of all, the way I see it, antinatalism at its core, that is, when we consider Koenig and Zapfe and their present-day successors, is just an extension or a spin-off or an offshoot, you could say, of traditional philosophical pessimism. Antinatalism is really just this pessimistic diagnosis of life and of the world, with this defining normative claim on top of it, that we should not create beings into existence that meet certain criteria, whether it's sentience or the ability to suffer or the ability to give and withhold consent or the moral impediment, like, choose whatever you like. But at the end of the day, antinatalism, at least to me, is really just a shorthand term for antinatalist pessimism. So you may be a pessimist without accepting the antinatalist conclusion, the antinatalist claim, but I don't think it is possible to decouple antinatalism from this underlying pessimism. And trying to separate antinatalism from its pessimistic roots and downplay its dark or supposedly negative elements just to make it more appealing to the masses or to the optimists or the normies, I don't think that's going to work out. And I think the same goes for antinatalist activism. Maybe pessimist activism doesn't sound particularly nice, but antinatalism is not just telling people that having a child is maybe not a good idea. You would have to convince people that they were seriously harmed by their parents by being brought into existence. You'd have to convince them that the human experience is not worth it, all things considered, and the miracle of life is perhaps not so wonderful after all. So I don't think you can just convince an optimist to become a pessimist and adopt pessimistic values and beliefs in a 5-minute conversation on the streets. I don't think that's going to work out.
Just to come back on that, Lenny, I just have one quick question about, just on this point before I lose it, on the point of talk. Do we need people to become antinatalists? And if I go back to the vegan example, I would love everyone to be an ethical vegan, but I don't think that's going to happen. But from my perspective, from behavior wise, if people still don't value animals morally, but they're buying the lab grown meat rather than the corpse of an animal that was tortured in a slaughterhouse, that's fine by me. So do we need to convert people to become philosophical or ethical antinatalists if they're doing the behaviors that antinatalists would approve of?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. And also, do we really want to have more pessimists in this world? I think the answer to that is not quite clear. I do think that, let's call it anti-procreative messaging. I mean, there's certainly room for it, with regards to, for example, environmentalist activism, or perhaps also feminist activism, showing people that no, you don't have to turn yourself into a birthing machine to be a human of value, and there are less dehumanizing ways to to live your life. I think it is definitely important and good that lifestyles and ways of life outside of that normal, having kids lifestyle are normalized. But Yeah, as far as antinatalism proper, so to speak, is concerned, I don't think that's going to be play a big role in that.
Carlos, what are your thoughts on whether or not we need to convince people to become ethical antinatalists, or we just need them to adopt antinatalist behaviors?
That's a really good question. Of course, you're using a lot of "we need to" and "must" and "should," etc. And you know, I mean, both myself and Lenny would kind of contest all those words.
That's totally fair. I realize.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, it was a bit leading, and I'm not blaming you for that. I mean, that's your focus, and we have our focus, of course. One thing I learned about doing vegan outreach is, and all the vegan outreach, at least here in the UK, or in London, I would say, in London and the home counties, they all focused on do not use environmental arguments, do not use health arguments, stick to the plight of the animals and minimizing the suffering of animals. And yeah, that's like a big thing for us on the streets when we do the outreach. And I think the difference, sorry, I will go back to antinatalism soon. And I think the reason we focus on the suffering of the animals and giving animals kind of moral consideration for their suffering is that people can go back on that, and they can go back on things like health, for example. I mean, look, vegans in general are healthier than non-vegans, but as somebody who lived the whole life being a healthy non-vegan, I know exactly how to be a healthy non-vegan. I don't think my health has improved becoming a vegan. It's just, you just need to read the labels in the same way that a vegan reads the labels and take care of those things. And I know plenty of very unhealthy vegans either as well. So I guess it then becomes like, for veganism, it's sort of, you know, use this kind of suffering argument, because anything else people can just go back, you know. They might say, you know, maybe somebody invents like this incredible carbon capture machine next year, and suddenly, you know, who cares about emissions, right?
Yeah.
Who cares about all that stuff? And then, oh, okay, cool, we can go back to eating animals and raising and transforming the Amazon into a field for the animals to graze, et cetera, et cetera. So we focus on the plight of animals, because that's one issue that which I guess vegans really care about. For antinatalism,
do you think, Carlos, just to come back on that, like, would you be open to trying out? So I've done a fair bit of street outreach as well, and my approach is always to come talk about the animals first, and then if they're not picking up on that, to try one of these other points, the health, the environment in particular, because from my perspective, if they eat fewer animals, it's not as good as them being vegan, and I really want them to be vegan. It's better than nothing. Similarly, if someone who was going to have 5 kids chose to have 2, they're not going to be an ethical antinatalist. But would that be better than if you hadn't spoken to them, and that maybe they were convinced to do it? Like, I think Prince Harry and Meghan, I don't even know if they're Prince and Duchess anymore, but I think they said they're only going to have 2 kids for the sake of the environment. If lots of people had that idea, who otherwise would have had more children, would that be better from an antinatalist perspective if they weren't going to respond at all to the ethical antinatalist arguments?
Yeah, well, I would say we'd be better from a creation of extra suffering perspective. I mean, when we talk about the antinatalist perspective, I think that's I really don't know what to think. If we're kind of building or growing antinatalism in that sense by people having fewer kids, or if there's an end goal for this plan. Last podcast we talked about that, we commented on a video where they said that antinatalism was logistically absurd, right, Lenny? And I mean, it is, right? I mean, we're not going to convince the world not to reproduce, but we can minimize the suffering. Of course, if we're talking about minimizing the suffering, there's many ways to go about it. You could say that, you know, I convince somebody not to have a kid. Well, that's one fewer person that's going to, you know, have diseases or be a murderer or be murdered or, you know, inflict pain or suffer pain, et cetera, et cetera. But, yeah. you know, maybe I decide to dedicate my life to cancer research to minimize suffering. And am I minimizing suffering as an end goal? Yes. Am I contributing to the antinatalist mission? No, unless we consider minimizing suffering to be the antinatalist mission. See what I'm trying to get at? It really depends yeah. what we consider to be the antinatalist goal. Is it spreading the ideas and reducing birth rates to zero, or is it minimizing suffering? Because if it's the latter, then there are multiple ways to go about it. And also we have to understand that if somebody wants to kind of contribute to this antinatalist goal, we all have different skills and talents and things we're good at and things things we're even allowed to learn or actually practice, depending on, you know, our skills and talents and so forth. So convincing people to do something might not be something that's within the reach of an activist, for example. And then they might say, well, I want to dedicate myself to minimizing suffering in a different way. Sorry, I'm just kind of being a sort of a devil's advocate, kind of putting ideas out there on the shape of antinatalist activism, if it should exist or if it should just be subsumed into a general goal of reducing suffering.
Definitely. And I think it'll be great to talk about end goal in the moment, but I did want to come back to your points, Lenny, about the antinatalist community maybe not mm-hmm. being fit. I don't want to put words into your mouth. Do you want to describe your point about the antinatalist community?
Yeah. So I'm skeptical whether the antinatalist community is like suitable for building a movement on. And this is because the antinatalist community, as I see it, is a very mixed bag. It is certainly home to some of the nicest, smartest, and coolest people I know, like Carlos, but also to some of the most difficult, strange, broken, cruel, and hypocritical I've ever had to deal with.
Like Lawrence Anton, no, I'm just
kidding. not naming any names here. So when you take a look at antinatalist communities online, especially the larger ones, you inevitably get the impression that you're dealing with an angry, lazy, and illiterate mob there. And is this really the audience that we want to appeal to? I mean, of course, it is very convenient to just use a philosophy like this, or just the label, the antinatalist label that, you know, you've just discovered, as some sort of ideological excuse to vent your hate and your frustrations in life, and sometimes even violent fantasies, and legitimize your personal issues. But that makes it very frustrating to engage in these circles. So to me, at least, it sometimes feels like a bit of a book club where nobody really cares to read the book, or rather like a movie fandom where nobody has seen the movie. Like people say, I identify with this or that character. I like this or that scene. My interpretation of the movie goes like this, even though they have never seen it at all. And this, I think, is indeed an issue, especially if we consider that communities centered around a philosophy or a philosophical position should promote intellectual curiosity and not some kind of intellectual stagnation that you often find in these echo chambers, so to speak. And when people show very dismissive attitudes towards professional philosophy, or show anti-intellectual attitudes in general, or like straight up refuse to read or even discourage others from reading philosophy, I think that's a very bad sign, especially with this narrative of like, now we're antinatalists and now this is kind of the end of our philosophical journey. I think this is very like counterproductive to having a good and healthy philosophical and intellectual discourse. And I find it quite bizarre when people say like, oh, you can come up with any counter arguments that you like, and, you know, show me your debunks of the asymmetry or whatever, but I'm a hardcore antinatalist. I'm sold on antinatalism and nothing is ever going to change my mind. I do find that a bit concerning, so to speak, because when I think about myself, I'm 27. I've went through all kinds of periods and phases in my life, and I don't think that I'm ever going to become some sort of cheery optimist or pathological optimist or a fanatical life lover, as David Pierce would say. I think that this would simply not, that would be out of character for me. And I don't think that my views on creation ethics are likely to fundamentally change anytime soon. But nonetheless, I do think it is possible that antinatalism, or the antinatalist part of my identity, may be relegated to a relatively unimportant aspect of my identity in the future. And we must also keep in mind that this has become kind of my mantra, I keep saying it also on Voidcast, that the antinatalist position is very, very limited in scope. It's only concerned with coming into existence and bringing into existence, but it leaves most questions in ethics, most questions also in your personal life, completely unanswered. So don't give it more space than it actually deserves. And I see that a lot of antinatalists online like make or seem to make this like the whole of their identity. And this is something that I don't think is very, very healthy. Like turning this position, this very specific position in a very specific context, turning it into some kind of performative identity. I don't think that is going to work out in the end.
And do you think, Lenny, that is something that is specific to the antinatalist community, or is it a feature of other communities, especially other online communities, that people have this? They, as you said, they adopt it and make it all of their identity.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I'm sure to a certain degree you can find this in all communities that are centered or supposed to be centered around some philosophical position that then becomes gradually watered down or dumped down the more popular the surrounding community becomes. I don't know, we can perhaps observe a similar phenomenon in the nihilist community or in the Stoic community as well. But especially when it comes to a position that has or claims to have some sort of moral force, moral imperative, I think then it can really also like have negative effects. And there's one thing that I wanted to add to what Carlos just said. I do think there is, generally speaking, there's more hope for let's say animal rights activism than for antinatalist activism in this respect, because I also like do street outreach for a local animal rights street team. And one major aspect of, or one reason why I do this is like simply to educate and to inform people. I'm sure most people are not aware of the horrible conditions that animals have to endure in slaughterhouses, for example. And once they are confronted with these impressions and with these with the evidence, then they might rethink their behavior, their attitudes towards this. But when you say, well, actually a human life is very, very bad, then I don't think that's going to convince a lot of people. They will just say, well, I'm a human, I know very well what a human life is like, I do consider it worth living, so please leave me alone, please.
Definitely, Lenny, I definitely agree with some of your points about the antinatalist community in terms of having that, making antinatalism a part of your identity. I think part of that is to do with online communities in general, because they really do filter people down. You relate to them through one thing. I think in person, you get to see that people are more complicated and they have more to them than this one characteristic, this one label, whereas online communities kind of filter people. But I do think maybe with the antinatalism, because a lot of people view it as like a solution to all of the world's problems. You know, it's in many ways, it's like a religion in the sense of I now know the truth. I now know that life is terrible and not worth living. Yeah, and then this, that makes people.
This, I think, is very dangerous when you see these dogmatic tendencies in online antinatalism. Like now, like this is the holy truth that everyone, like we are smart enough to understand it, and everyone else, you know, just has to be taught the right way.
Yes. And as someone who used to be religious, I can definitely say that it can scratch similar parts of your brain. But what are your thoughts, Carlos, in terms of the antinatalist community and whether or not the community is fit to be something to build a social movement off?
Well, as Lenny said, and I agree with him, there's not enough in strictly antinatalist position to base a movement on. I think we need more. One of the things that really surprised me about the antinatalist community is because I'm also a lefty, far, far, far lefty, and so was the co-host of the original of Void Wave. We're both very, very far on the left, and I was really surprised when I kind of came across the antinatalist community. I found like right wingers in it, for example, And it really shocked me. I thought, no, surely to come to the antinatalist position, you must have a high degree of empathy towards others and the suffering of others. And in this would include all of humanity, because we all come into existence. Birth, you know, is universal. Doesn't matter your skin tone or your religion, etc. So you would extend the compassion to everybody. So you would be on the left of the political spectrum. But that's not true. There's plenty of right-wingers and fascists in the antinatalist community. And then I came to realize it's because the antinatalist position is so limited in its scope of how to conduct ourselves and its ethics, even though the ethics it does talk about are fundamental to human existence, but it just leaves a lot of questions unanswered. And in that sense, yes, it's not enough. It needs to be kind of coupled with other things to take some sort of shape. In that sense, veganism is more like a complete picture straight away and more kind of holistic. Having said that, and I mentioned this in our previous podcast, there is a fundamental lack of antinatalist institutions. I'm not saying they should be antinatalist institutions, but they could be, you know, institutions of something that includes antinatalist as part of one of its pillars. So there's like a lack of those. And maybe if those existed, they would then include other attachments to it. So for example, when I did the Void Wave podcast, our pillars were being a commie, being an antinatalist, being a vegan, right? Those three things together. I'm not saying they encompass all of human experience, all of ethics, but they encompass quite a lot on how to move about the world and how to feel about things and what to do. And, you know, answering ethical questions. Whereas if you just base it on antinatalism, it's too narrow. And I'm saying if antinatalist institutions do come up, and of course there have been attempts, and I think, you know, your YouTube channel and, you know, other ventures that have existed within the antinatalist world have attempted this or are attempting this and are kind of building. They would need to kind of expand and or make some decisions about antinatalism and say, instead of considering like 12 different reasons to be antinatalist, you say, no, these are the reasons which are consistent with each other to be an antinatalist, for example. But as I said, it's not my goal to create one of those institutions. I just run a podcast because I like hearing my own voice.
Just on the point about like political positions, because you both mentioned that you're both left wing, and something I was wondering is whether or not people with the antinatalist community, because we've talked about antinatalism being a very kind of limited position, And I wonder if that is a negative thing or a positive thing that people can get behind who have differing views in different ways. So, for example, this is an ongoing one. I know we keep talking about the vegan community, but I think it probably is the closest that we have the antinatalist community, and there's a lot of overlap. And someone's position on like whether or not animals deserve rights doesn't necessarily have to do with their position on patriotism, like borders, or which economic policy is best, or even which social policy is best beyond the position for animals. And I wonder, with much of the world being considerably more right-wing, and again, like left and right, that I think are often used in quite confusing ways, but considering much of the world being much more religious, much more conservative than your typical Western leftist, do we want antinatalism to be associated with a particular political position?
Personally, I don't think so. I don't see why this position of population ethics, procreative ethics, bioethics, perhaps more generally, needs to be associated with anything else, to be honest. I mean, there is certainly a diversity of views and a diversity of approaches to antinatalism. You can reach like the antinatalist conclusion, so to speak, from a variety of different standpoints, from a deontological perspective, as well as from a like reducing suffering, a suffering focused perspective. And I don't think that it is advisable to say no, only this kind of antinatalism is valid or is welcome, so to speak. I don't think, I mean, as I said, this it is indeed a very limited position, and no, it's not going to save the world, and no, it's not going to solve the problem of suffering. But I don't think we have to make it even more narrower than it already is.
This definitely makes sense. And this was going to tie into a question, going back to something we mentioned earlier about the end goal. And my question to you both, and we'll start with you, Carlos, is what do you view the antinatalist end goal as being, if there even is one?
Theoretically, human extinction. But I generally don't think it will ever happen, not through antinatalism. I mean, it will happen, but not through antinatalism. No matter how disappointed people become with life, or how, I guess, enlightened in this case. If there's an end goal, it's impossible not to talk about human extinction. Even as much as we don't want to talk about it, it's impossible not to talk about it. And certainly when you talk about antinatalism with people who have never heard of the term, a lot of them will quickly come to that conclusion and say, oh, so you want humans to go extinct. They will say this, and it's not like they've been thinking about population ethics for their whole lives. It just comes naturally. So it's impossible to avoid, and you know, truthfully, it is the end goal, if there is an end goal. Having said that, you can be an antinatalist and not because you're a human extinctionist. You can just agree with all the principles of antinatalism and say, yes, this is the correct ethical position, and I consider human extinction an unfortunate byproduct of this, or something that perhaps I'm not totally comfortable with, but because you have to do the right thing leads to this conclusion. Therefore, I mean, it's sort of a hypocritical position in this sense. My antinatalism, I consider my private, guides a part of my life, and I've certainly put my personal decisions towards that. And I will talk about antinatalism about anybody who wants to hear. I mean, I'm doing it right now, and I have a podcast, of course. But I don't see my antinatalism having an end goal besides that.
That definitely makes sense. What are your thoughts, Lenny?
Well, first of all, I don't feel really comfortable speaking about end goals, because I think that end-state-oriented or end-state-focused ideologies can be very, very dangerous. We see this, for example, in these long-termist ideas that are now very, very popular in Silicon Valley, for example. And I also think that we as, I mean, as antinatalists, I do think that it is more reasonable to focus on the individual and individual and the individual sphere and make antinatal decisions on the individual level. That is both with regards to reproduction, of course, but also there might be other spheres of life where you can make antinatal decisions, consumption, for example. But trying to find some universal, collective, or state-level solution, I don't think that is where the antinatalist position, I mean, like, tends towards. I think as antinatalists, and with the arguments that we have, as well as the biases and the limitations of our position, I think that keeping it to an individual sphere is probably the best that that we can do. I do think it is important, if we take a look at the history of antinatalism and antinatalist literature, we'll see that it is more about turning away from the world than it is about fundamentally changing the world. And I had to think of the great Emile Cioran. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him.
I'm not, no.
Okay, I highly recommend checking out his work. He also wrote this fantastic collection of aphorisms called The Trouble with Being Born. And so if you want to read some true and genuine rejection of existence, then this might be right up your alley. He talks about his skepticism, very deep skepticism of the world and all the futility and failure in it. And I mean, there's certainly a lot of bitterness and emptiness in his writing. But what I think is very important is that it highlights the paradoxical nature of existence, like that it is simply not solvable by our means. So it's not like you can just like identify a cause area and then raise funds and donate and whatever, and then the problem is solved. No, I think it is important as an antinatalist pessimist to keep that in mind and not to get carried away by the enthusiasm and perhaps the optimism that antinatalism may or may not bring along with it. So this is one important aspect, certainly.
Yeah, definitely. And just touching on something you said there about the enthusiasm and the optimism, that is something that I have noticed in the antinatalist community, is a lot of pessimism about the meaning of life, but you know, the quality of life and the state of the world, and a lot of justified pessimism about that. But then potentially a huge degree of optimism in terms of what we can feasibly do about it, like we can achieve the barren rock that people might be ending for, or even the blown up rock if we ever did actually feasibly invent the red button from the famous thought experiment. And just building upon your answers to my last question about the end goal, I wonder, is it helpful to think about antinatalism as an end goal or as a means to an end? And what I mean is, should our focus be on, you know, beings, no more beings coming into existence, or should we think of it as Lawrence described it, a tool in our toolbox? So by not bringing beings into existence, like bring about a better world. And one of the ways we can do this is by choosing not to bring beings into existence. What are your thoughts, Carlos?
I would say the latter, although there's definitely a lot to do in terms of harm reduction besides not bringing life into existence, even though that would be sort of a totalizing solution. There's quite a lot of other things. If people are so passionate about reducing the pains of life, there's a lot of that people can do and even get paid for it, besides evangelizing antinatalism.
Well, I do think that antinatalism is certainly an ethical position, is a good position. Whether it's the best one, I'm not sure. In this very specific context, like, should I bring this or that being into existence? And just like, for example, veganism is a position I would consider perhaps the most ethical one with regards to the question of should I consume animal products, for example. And as such, I would consider it a morally based lifestyle decision, not necessarily pointing towards some greater goal or some other end. It's just a small thing that, or maybe for some people it's actually a huge sacrifice, but it's something that everyone can do. It's a part that everyone can play, and it's it might contribute to leading a more ethical life overall.
Yeah, definitely, and I definitely agree with both your perspectives that I think it's more helpful to view antinatalism as a means to an end. And this is why when Lawrence and I were putting together our website for antinatalist advocacy, and we spent a long time, as you can imagine, poring over exactly how we want to phrase our mission statement and what we're looking to do. It seems like a small difference, but instead of saying the harm of coming into existence, we said the harms of coming into existence. We didn't want all of our focus to be just on stopping beings from coming into existence, but also, where possible, improving the quality of life of the beings who exist now and will inevitably exist in the future. And this is why, while I do understand why antinatalists can be confused as to why David Pearce, for example, might be speaking at an antinatalist conference, I personally would view, I think that him and I have the same end goal, which is to protect beings from the harms of coming into existence, the way that someone like Matty Hyrie seeks to do that is by putting out ideas around not bringing beings into existence. And David Pearce does it by seeking to improve the experience of beings who are brought into existence and will be brought into existence in the future. So I view them as perfectly mutually complementary and, you know, really important goals. Well, really important means to broadly achieving the same goal. But that's just my two cents. And I know this is something we've been touching on all the way through, but my last question on this particular topic was, what would be your advice for an antinatalist looking to have a positive impact in the world? We'll come to you first, Carlos.
Find something, a source of suffering in the world that you think you can contribute to minimizing. Learn the skills or qualifications necessary to minimize it, and then go out and do it. It might even help you pay your rent. So, for example, if you are really clever, like a bookish type person, maybe you go and research, kind of contribute to medical research, or for example, to creating energy with a little waste or emissions. If you are really good in pressure situations, maybe you can learn how to be a paramedic. If you are really good with people, maybe you can be a counselor, a therapist. You know, just find something that's bad with the world. Look at your skills and things you enjoy doing and then kind of get the qualifications and, you know, whatever skills, extra skills or permissions you need to be able to do it. And yeah, you know, basically all I'm saying is help other people, because the suffering is universal, right? That's one of the principles of antinatalism. So if the human condition is full of suffering, that applies to everybody, not just to yourself. And maybe there's something you have that, you know, disposition or demeanor, your things you like to do that can help other people. And so that's my advice.
Great. Thanks, Carlos. And what are your thoughts, Lenny? Advice for an antinatalist looking to have a positive impact on the world?
Oh, well, I think I'll give you an answer that it's not going to be a very satisfying one, but more of a Buddhist kind of answer. I think it's to get rid of the desire to make an impact, to have an impact. Do away with concepts like maximizing expecting value and doing the most good. This sounds a bit like moral capitalism to me. And on the fifth episode of Voidcast, I like half jokingly said that this kind of rhetoric triggers my anti-capitalist sensitivities. But no, I do think that this is actually like wanting to have an impact, you know, as big as possible, or to maximize this or that. I do think that this is actually potentially dangerous utilitarian rhetoric. And it can, for example, it can easily be used and abused to justify a lot of like moral compromises, semi-benign acts here and there, when you do it like for the so-called greater good. And so this is something that I think we should be very approach with great caution. But if you are determined to go down the utilitarian route, I think focusing on like getting rid of harmful habits and, you know, not harming others, I think that this is probably the right way to go. But I generally advise like treating these, maximizing this and doing the most of that with great caution. That being said, you asked us what antinatalists can do and what kind of activities I would maybe recommend for antinatalists.
Yes, your general advice for someone, an antinatalist that is looking to have that positive impact.
I mean, generally speaking, the same options are open to antinatalists that are open to all other people as well. But if you want to do good, so to speak, if you want to become active in your capacities as an antinatalist, there are things that I would recommend, such as forming local groups. Now, we know that, of course, the antinatalist community is very scattered around the world, but a lot of people have reported that they find it very comforting to know other people who share these beliefs and have some sort of support group, support network. So I think that getting involved in like local groups, local communities is certainly something that a lot of antinatalists can do if they like. And what I would also recommend is starting some sort of book club, which I know my buddy Conundrum and Mark J. Maharaj, also known as Question Mark on YouTube, are doing. So I think this is very important for kind of the philosophical and intellectual side of antinatalism, which at the end of the day is still a philosophical position. But I do think that especially this emotional support thing is something that can be very valuable and helpful for a lot of people. And I know that, what's his name? Do Not Watch and Danny Shine, do something like this. So shout out to them as well. And yeah, I think supporting each other in these difficult times is definitely something that I would recommend. And if your compassion and concern extend beyond human animals, you can, for example, consider getting involved in animal rights activism, or you can also consider getting involved in environmental activism or any other sort of like humanitarian cause. It does not have to be directly related to antinatalism, I think. So if you have the motivation to get involved in any kind of activism, then you know, it can definitely be helpful to kind of broaden your focus. Even, I mean, there are lots of ways to help human and non-human animals. Most of them are simply not connected or not directly connected to antinatalism.
Great. Thanks both. And just to follow up on your point, Lenny, about being careful about always trying to do the absolute most good and, you know, not making questionable moral decisions in order to do good. If you haven't already, please do look into Sam Bankman-Fried and FTX. Yeah. And you'll see an example of someone who I genuinely do believe was motivated to do good, who ended up doing some rather shady things.
And please check out the writings of Emil Pitoris. Yeah,
we can definitely link them below this episode.
Yeah, you should also reach out to them, because I'm sure they can give you a lot of useful advice and perhaps warnings when it comes to this effective altruism approach to doing things. So definitely please get in touch with them. We discussed their 500-page tome on human extinction on Voidcast as well. But just another thing that I would really like to add, because it is very important to me personally. We briefly talked about this enthusiasm that antinatalism, or just discovering that there is such a philosophy, that there is such a community, can inspire in people. But it got to me too, and I was very enthusiastic and excited when I found out about it, and then made the mistake of kind of burying myself in all kinds of projects related to it. And I would just want to say that like antinatalist burnout is something that is very real and not very healthy. So please don't become a full-time antinatalist. Don't let it take up too much space, not more than it really deserves. Do other things as well in life, and you know, don't even consider like cutting out non-antinatalist friends or something like that. So I think Carlos and I, we do a lot of things. We are both musicians, for example, with lots of interesting things. Don't be just an antinatalist is what I'm trying to say. This is very important.
Oh, definitely. That topic of burnout and, you know, antinatalist welfare is so important, because it is something that we do see a lot of in the antinatalist community. And that is something that we will be focusing future episodes on. Sure.
And we can't just leave the entire field of basic mental hygiene to the cheery optimists and fanatical life lovers of this world, right?
Absolutely. People who view antinatalism itself as some sort of pathology. I remember looking at a mental health questionnaire, and one of the questions for having low mental health was whether or not you thought the future would go badly. And I was sitting there thinking, okay, so global warming, unregulated AI, factory farming, global pandemics that could be made in the test tube, big power conflict between America and China, and all of the social problems that we haven't sorted out yet, even in the West, where things are in many ways better than they were in the past. And I'm just there thinking, wow, I'm not so sure if being a bit pessimistic when you look at all of that means that you do have poor mental health. But I just wanted to thank you both for, I do feel like we have scratched the surface with this conversation on the topic of doing good as an antinatalist, which is obviously a central theme within this podcast. but really grateful for the conversation that we've had. And before you go, are there any other projects you're working on that you'd like to share, or just general updates about Voidcast that you'd like to share?
Yeah, sure. I mean, with regards to Voidcast, the basic concept is going to stay the same for the foreseeable future. I think we'll just keep doing it until it's no longer fun or until we run out of ideas. We have a long list of topics to cover, and we are always open to suggestions. So please let us know if there's anything you'd like us to cover in one of the future episodes. We're going to talk about, as we have before, about movies, about books, both academic and fiction, some papers and articles. We are planning to do a review of the Antinatalism magazine and of Lawrence's Antinatalist argument guide as well. And we were also asked to cover some of the more obscure pessimistic thinkers on our podcast. And what I'm really looking forward to is doing interviews. So we are also planning to do interviews with people who have had very mixed experiences within the antinatalist community and have a very nuanced perspective on things. So this is something that we're going to do in the new year. And sometimes we joke about going big and selling merchandise, like these selling little Carlos and Lenny Funko Pop figures.
That will never happen, by the way. That will never, ever happen.
Not if I have anything to do with it, because, of course, as a competitor, I can't be letting you do it. No, I'm just kidding. What was the point you said earlier, Carlos, about the rising tide?
Rising tide lifts all the boats.
Exactly.
But the first antinatalist podcast or YouTube channel to hit the big time will then kind of drag the others along, right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Maybe we can become a subculture on YouTube, like atheism back in the day, and then anti-SJWs back in the day. And
people who play Minecraft.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we will be the new, what's the one that the dancers come from? Oh, I've forgotten the
TikTok.
Video game.
TikTok.
Not even TikTok. Oh, it's a video
Fortnite.
Game. Fortnite, yes. God, yeah. That was a huge boomer moment for me there, forgetting what Fortnite was.
But aside from Voidcast, I'm also working on a couple of other projects that I've mentioned. For example, I'm currently working on translating the work of the first modern antinatalist who went by the name of Koenig. And last year, I organized I'm not sure if I'd call it a conference, but it was a guest lecture together with the famous German antinatalist philosopher Karim Akerma on the topic of Judeo-Christian antinatalism. And you can now find meticulously subtitled recordings of that conference on YouTube if you're interested, with lots of interesting and helpful resources in the description. And other than that, I also keep a somewhat comprehensive bibliography of academic papers on antinatalism. And considering that a lot of writings on pessimism, pessimistic philosophy were written originally in German, and only a small portion of these has ever been translated into English, I'm also considering offering German language courses for people who are interested in philosophical pessimism. And because I think that knowing German is going to be very, very useful if you are interested in philosophical pessimism. And yeah, also to any other German-speaking listeners, please, if you like, get in touch with me, because lots of interesting things are happening in the German-speaking world as well. We have regular meetups in the north and also in the south. So, yeah, do get in touch if you like.
Great. Thanks, both. And one thing that we're looking to do is, with the end of every episode, we'd like to end on a positive note, because maybe we are one of those hopeless, optimistic antinatalists that we were talking about earlier. But what would you say is a positive note, Ruth, regarding antinatalism that you'd like to end on? Come to you first, Carlos.
I don't think we've ever had as much quality offering online about antinatalism and up to date and debates and book reviews. I mean, there's more antinatalist stuff now than there's ever been. You know, more translations, more podcasts, more debates, more articles, more books than we ever had before. That's positive.
Great. And Lenny?
Yeah, I mean, as Carlos said, once we look past all the cringe bait and rage bait on TikTok, once we look past the rants and the shitposting on Reddit and the constant anime spam on Discord, we will find that indeed a lot of exciting things are happening in the antinatalist world. For example, just last year, a special edition of the Journal of Value Inquiry was published on antinatalist philosopher. On antinatalist philosophy, with a number of philosophers arguing both for and against it. And new articles on antinatalism are published every couple of weeks. New arguments are being actively developed and discussed and criticized. So, yeah, a lot of research is also being done on the fascinating and complex history of antinatalist thinking, which is also my own main field of study. And we are starting to see psychological surveys of the surrounding community. So a lot of interesting things are happening even outside of the strictly academic sphere, which some of them are covered by Tejas in his weekly news roundups. And then we have organizations like yours and exciting events like the conference and, you know, lots of other projects. As I said, local and independent groups are starting to form, which is always nice to see. And you can theoretically spend the whole day engaging with antinatalists and immersing yourself in antinatalist content, which is not...
Would you recommend people do that, Lenny?
Not what I recommend, but it is possible. And if nothing else, there's Voidcast. There's a new episode every month to consume and then get excited for the next one. So if two guys discussing philosophical and artistic expressions of hopelessness doesn't give you hope, I don't know. I don't know what will. But seriously, does being a pessimist make your life better? Does it make your life easier? I think that's hard to tell. I don't know. But being a pessimist allows you to appreciate certain books and pieces of art in a very special way that is perhaps not accessible to most. And I think that this appreciation is worth embracing. So that's my positive note for you.
Great. And that's a great note to end on. Thank you so much, both. If you haven't already, listeners, please do go and check out Voidcast. There'll be a ton of links in the description box below. So yeah, huge thank you from me again. And thank you to you, the listener, for listening. Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Antinatalist Advocacy Podcast. If you like what you heard today, please subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. We'd also be really grateful if you could help us get the word out there by sharing this episode far and wide, as well as giving us a positive rating on whichever platform you're listening to us on. To find out more about AA, including careers advice, donation recommendations, and different ways to have a positive impact, you can go to our website at antinatalistadvocacy.org. To keep up to date with what we're up to, feel free to subscribe to our monthly newsletter and follow us on your favourite social media platforms. Links to all of the above are in the description. As always, we are hoping you will join us in our antinatalist advocacy.